someone. My lord, your time has come right between the eyes. Fell his master not by chance, away with pomp and circumstance. Come join our merry dance to the rhythm of goodbye. Farewell, the jewel crown.
Hello there, and welcome to The Monarchy with me, Samson Sees, here on Press TV. On this programme, we give you the counter-mainstream stories that surround Britain. Quite different from the usual stuff you hear on the majority of media networks. So what's been going on lately with the not-so-OK UK? To start with, there are talks of another Western military intervention in the Middle East. While in the UK itself, a pro-Zionist individual has been honoured by Her Majesty. Who would think that was possible? And speaking of medals, some people have actually been refusing medals from the Queen. Want to know the reasons why? Then stay with us. Just before we look into Britain's controversial foreign affairs, feast your eyes on the latest UK news headlines. Here's the update.
Three senior hospital executives behind a cover-up into 16 babies' deaths at one of Britain's National Health Service, NHS hospitals, were named by the NHS watchdog. Up to 16 babies and two mothers are feared to have died between 2001 and 2012 because of poor care at the Barrow-in-Furness Health Centre in Cumbria. Former chief executive of Furness General Hospital, Cynthia Bauer, her deputy, Jill Finney, and media manager Anna Jefferson were named by the Care Quality Commission, CQC, after public pressure to disclose the individuals' identities had mounted. Yes Scotland campaign has identified a shift in favour of Scotland leaving the UK among growing numbers of young people and women, two groups believed to be mostly against the Scottish independence. The shift was recorded by the same polling system that found the surge of support for the Scottish National Party, SNP, to a majority in the Holyrood Scottish elections in 2011. Britain's top banks must plug a £27.1 billion hole in their finances, with Royal Bank of Scotland, RBS, facing the biggest shortfall. According to the Prudential Regulation Authority, PRA, Barclays, Lloyds Banking Group and RBS failed to hold the required capital of at least 7% of their risk-weighted assets and therefore need to raise £27.1 billion in capital to cover the risk of loans. Visitors from Asian and African nations will have to pay a £3,000 cash bond deposit to enter Britain. According to the Sunday Times, the pilot scheme, according to which visitors aged 18 and over would be forced to pay £3,000 for a six-month visitor's visa and will target visitors from November this year. Moreover, the money would be forfeited in case of overstay. British MPs have spent nearly £500,000 of public money on business class flights since the 2010 general election. 55 MPs have exploited a loophole to buy business class tickets that can be twice as expensive as standard class. Moreover, it has been revealed that the number of business class flights taken by UK lawmakers at the taxpayers' expense has almost doubled in a single year, with 10 MPs claiming for more than 100 premium airfares each. Revelations of UK politicians spending on luxury flights prompt criticism from campaigners. The German Justice Minister has demanded an explanation from London over reports that the British intelligence services have been tapping global internet traffic and phone calls, saying the allegations are a nightmare out of Hollywood. The agency's controversial plan is to scoop up as much online and telephone traffic as possible under its Mastering the Internet and Global Telecoms Exploitation program.
Do governments learn from past mistakes? Considering that the UK and the US really are trying for another intervention into another Middle Eastern country, this time it happens to be Syria. Another area where ordinary citizens are victim of foreign terror. Sudden political figures like the ex-French foreign minister Roland Dumais admitted that leaders in his country had gone crazy. He was referring to the French-led NATO attack on Libya in 2011. But now in 2013, even though 90% of Britain's Labour Party are against intervening militarily in Syria, their former leader and ex-prime minister Tony Blair is supporting it. That's the same Prime Minister who told us all in March 2003 that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, thereby justifying a Western military intervention, which resulted in 1 million Iraqi deaths in total so far. Will such a controversial move happen all over again?
If we show weakness now, if we allow the plea for more time just to become an excuse for prevarication until the moment for action passes, then it will not only be Saddam that is repeating history. The menace, and not just from Saddam, will grow, the authority of the UN will be lost, and the conflict, when it comes, will be even more bloody.
We did, in the very final days before military action, receive some on CBW use, that it was disassembled, that he might not have the munitions to deliver it. April 2000, the picture was limited on chemical weapons. May 2001, the knowledge of WMD and ballistic missile programs was patchy. March 2002, the intelligence on Iraqi WMD and ballistic missiles is sporadic and patchy. The assessment of the 9th of September 2002, intelligence remains limited.
History is repeating itself, and the governments of Britain and the US are conspiring for a bogus pretense for intervening militarily in Syria with the same unfounded claims which led to the Iraq War. Like former British Prime Minister Tony Blair and former US President George W. Bush, David Cameron and Barack Obama are making every attempt to sell the allegation that the Syrian government has used chemical weapons against its own people.
The candid assessment from the Americans, it is consistent with what we've already said. There is credible evidence of multiple attacks using chemical weapons in Syria, including the use of the abhorrent agent sarin.
As for Iraq, where claims of existence of weapons of mass destruction emerged to be indefensible, scandalous lies, the British and US authorities are claiming that the Syrian army has used chemical weapons and thus crossed the so-called red line.
And I can tell the House today that there is a growing body of limited but persuasive information showing that the regime has used and continues to use chemical weapons, including sarin. And the room for doubt about this continues to diminish.
The scenarios being considered by both Britain and the US for invading Syria are very much similar to those used against Iraq to justify a war which killed almost 1 million people and displaced millions more. These include making every attempt to establish a no-fly zone over parts of Syria, which itself requires destruction of the targeted country's air force, surface-to-air missiles, and other infrastructure, and seeking to open a so-called humanitarian corridor inside Syria to help people affected by the war.
Средства массовой информации, в частности, вот недавно в Wall Street Journal, были утечки о том, что всерьез обсуждается создание бесполетной зоны в Сирии путем размещения батарей противовоздушных комплексов Patriot
и самолетов F-16 в Иордании. Не надо быть большим экспертом, чтобы понять, что это будет все равно нарушение международного права. Мы очень надеемся, что наши американские коллеги все-таки будут все свои практические действия выстраивать под реализацию совместной российско-американской инициативы по созыву конференции.
Like the run-up to the Iraq war, Britain and allies employ media outlets to propagate meaningless terms such as non-lethal aid in a war setting. It's meaningless because so-called non-lethal aid directly assists in the business of killing innocent people. Having learned nothing from Iraq, the British and US media again regurgitate the facts as it is spoon-fed to them by their governments, no questions asked. This is wild that the role of the UN as a legal reference entity is wishfully being ignored as far as the usage of weapons of mass destruction is concerned. UN rights investigator Carla Del Ponte asserts that, according to the testimonies we have gathered, the Syrian rebels have used chemical weapons, making use of sarin gas.
We believe that the scale of use is sanctioned and ordered by the Assad regime. We haven't seen any credible reporting of chemical weapons use by the Syrian opposition.
The UN representative reiterates again that rebels have used chemical weapons, not the Syrian government. However, David Cameron and Barack Obama, who are seeking to regain lost popularity by invading a third country, like what their predecessors Tony Blair and George W. Bush did to Iraq, are ignoring the UN role because they have invested too much of their foreign policy credibility in Syria. Both Cameron and Obama have played as the backbone of terrorists in Syria. They have handpicked a group of rich Syrian exiles and molded them into their officially recognized government of Syria, while pressurizing other nations to also recognize these nobodies as the legitimate Syrian government. The British and US's Syria policy has turned an already fragile region into a smoldering tinderbox.
We've now had over a decade of military intervention by the West in the Arab region. It's now spreading into North Africa, that this is an error. You were told by your own security services 10 years ago that the invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq would spread the influence of the terrorists, not diminish it. And that's been absolutely true. There was no Al-Qaeda in Iraq a decade ago, but there is now. There was no Al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula, but there is now. There was no Al-Qaeda in Mali, but there is now. Surely it's time to draw the lesson that Western military intervention cannot be a solution to the problems of the region.
Having learned nothing from the catastrophes of Afghanistan, Iraq, or Libya, it seems President Obama, the equally clueless UK Prime Minister Cameron, and his culturally challenged Foreign Secretary William Hague are cheerleading another bloodbath in a formerly peaceful, outward-looking Syria.
The Deputy Syrian Foreign Minister talked about with the chemical weapons issue. It essentially could be a false flag. Pretext used by NATO in coordination and collaboration with the rebels in order to potentially attack an area of Syria using chemical weapons and blame it on the Syrian army. We would not be surprised if this happened, and there has been lots of cooperation and coordination between NATO and rebels.
We fear that there might be a conspiracy hatched by the US administration or powers in Western Europe to supply armed terrorist groups in Syria with such materials in order to accuse after that government of the Syrian Arab Republic in order to justify any aggression or any measure that could be taken locally or internationally in this regard.
Well, Her Majesty's 87th birthday was in April, but some issues surrounding her birthday honours list are unfolding. The honours are usually given to people who are recognised for their positive contribution to British society. So why would the Queen reward someone who supports what many see as the illegal state of Israel and also campaigns against boycotting the Israeli regime? In 2007, the UK's largest trade union, Unison, backed a total boycott of the Zionist regime over its continued occupation of Palestinian territories. The more the Israeli regime shows aggression, the more these individuals will be seen, especially outside the Israeli embassy in London. Here's the story.
As part of her birthday honours list, the British Queen will recognise a professor of Ben Gurion University for advocating academic partnership between countries and opposing the UK academic boycott of Israel. Professor David Newman, Dean of Humanities and Social Sciences at Ben Gurion University of the Negev, will receive the award for his promotion of the academic partnership between Britain and Israel. He has been a leading advocate of the academic partnership between the countries and a key campaigner against the British academic boycott of Israel. Traditionally, royal honours are granted to deserving and high-achieving people from every section of the community, from school crossing officials and charity workers to leaders of the industry. The UK honours system rewards people for merit, service or bravery. An honour, decoration or medal is a public way of illustrating that the recipient has done something worthy of recognition. As the fountain of honour in the United Kingdom, the Queen has the sole right of conferring all titles of honour, including life peerages, knighthoods and gallantry awards. Honorary decorations and awards are occasionally granted to people from other countries that have made a significant contribution to relations between the United Kingdom and their own country. These awards are granted on the advice of the Foreign and Commonwealth Office. Recipients of honours receive their awards from the Queen or the Prince of Wales at a ceremony known as an investiture. The Royal Award to a key campaigner against the British academic boycott of Israel is in direct contrast with the majority of British academicians' attitudes against the Zionist regime. Proposals for an academic boycott of Israel have been inspired by the historic academic boycotts of South Africa, which were an attempt to pressure South Africa to end its policies of apartheid.
Israel is a state which we in Britain and our allies in America support financially and politically. They are implementing an apartheid against people in that country. They're making people stateless. They are contrary to the UN law. So it is a pretty unique situation, actually.
The idea of an academic boycott against Israel first emerged publicly in England on the 6th of April 2002 in an open letter to The Guardian initiated by Stephen and Hilary Rose, professors in biology at the Open University and social policy at the University of Bradford, respectively, who called for a moratorium on all cultural and research links with Israel. By July 2002, the open letter had gained over 700 signatories, including those of 10 Israeli academics. On the 22nd of April 2005, the Council of Association of University Teachers, AUT, voted to boycott two Israeli universities, University of Haifa and Bar Ilan University. In May 2006, on the last day of its final conference, the National Association of Teachers in Further and Higher Education, NATFHE, passed Motion 198C, a call to boycott Israeli academics who did not vocally speak out against their government. On the 30th of May 2007, the Congress of the University and College Union voted by 158 votes to 99 on Motion 30, called for the UCU to circulate a boycott request by Palestinian trade unions to all branches for information and discussion. A joint open letter by a group of academics was published in The Guardian on the 16th of January 2009. The letter called on the British government and the British people to take all feasible steps to oblige Israel to stop its military aggression and colonial occupation of the Palestinian land and its criminal use of force, suggesting to start with a program of boycott, divestment, and sanctions. At the UCU Annual Congress, held on the 27th to the 29th of May 2009, the union again passed a resolution to boycott Israeli academics and academic institutions by a large majority. Delegates stated that Israeli academics were complicit in their government's acts against Palestinians. The union also overwhelmingly rejected a resolution urging them to examine the trend of resignations of UCU members, apparently in connection with perceptions of institutional anti-Semitism. At its annual 2010 conference, UCU members voted to support the boycott, divestment and sanctions campaign against Israel and sever ties with the Histadrut, Israel's organization of trade unions.
I think that if we are citizens, and if we are citizens of conscience, to walk around carrying the label citizen of conscience requires us to act. Requires us to act in any way we can, and the most minimal way we can is to say that we are not going to use the services, we are not going to use the goods, we are not going to purchase them. We, as employees of a firm, are not going to handle the goods produced by those of a state and exported by that state to earn its foreign income that will be spent on the drones and the bullets and the tanks, that will be spent on the university departments that train the military and the intelligence officers, that train the doctors to discover new medicines that have never been discovered before, and that happens in Israel, but also trains them how to tell whether a torture victim will die under further pressure, or whether the pressure can continue for a little bit longer so that he or she or the child can reveal who their friends are and who else can be arrested in order to be subjected to the torture. That seems to me to be the reason why we cannot stand aside. And this not standing aside is not just necessary for us to have any self-respect in the knowledge of what goes on, it's also necessary for the Palestinians to show them that when our governments declare their solidarity with Israel and their opposition to a boycott, they are not speaking for their people. Just as when our government decided to go on an illegal war in Iraq, it was not speaking for the people of this country, so when our government says it stands four square behind Israel, it's not speaking for us. The Palestinians need to know that whether by significant minority or majority, the population of Britain or France or the United States does not echo the words of its government. And the second reason for the Palestinians is because they need to know that democracy doesn't simply deliver governments that ignore the wills of their people. Democracies are spaces and places where the people, when ignored, can rise up, can take into their own hands ways of carrying through their wishes, and boycott, disinvestment and sanctions is one of those. That applies to Israeli academic institutions just as much as it applies to the manufacturers of oranges using the confiscated water of Palestinian lands. I urge you to vote in this election and to vote yes.
In May 2013, Stephen Hawking joined the academic boycott of Israel by reversing his decision to participate in the Jerusalem-based Israeli presidential conference hosted by Israeli President Shimon Peres. Hawking approved a published statement from the British Committee for the Universities of Palestine that described his decision as independent.
This boycott of Stephen Hawking's to the President Conference in Israel indicates to the growing criticisms to the Israeli violations of the Palestinian rights and violations of international law that is increasing.
Wow, now that's the kind of content you can expect from a source like ours. We do hope you found it all informative. So if you'd like to get involved and talk to us about anything to do with Britain, go ahead and add us on Facebook. Our profile name is UK Desk Press TV. Or if you prefer, you can simply send us your emails to britain@presstv.ir. As always, it's our privilege to hear about your ideas and opinions. You've certainly been watching The Monarchy, and The Monarchy has for sure been watching Britain. Until our next episode, stay well, take care, and goodbye from me and the team.
Dear old mum, mummified on gin and rum, smile and wave and just play dumb. Goodbye.